Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans to do the same. Today, my interview is episode number 241 with Scott Davidson.
So for the having your own business, I love the fact that every hour that I put into something comes back to me, right? There is nothing better that I work 80 hours for myself than 40 for somebody else, right? And it feels good. And when you get that success, there's nothing better than knowing that, you know, I did that. So 80 hours for me in a week, or 100 hours for me in a week nowadays, you know, that's all for me, right? I know that it's building the business. And then the end result is there's a success, which then does all these other stable things, you know, my family and just your lifestyle. But people, I would caution for entrepreneurship to understand that it's not going to be 40 hours a week.
Well, I'm betting that when you think of government contracting and legal regulation, you are probably not thinking about entrepreneurship or an exciting opportunity. My guest today, on the other hand, does, and it's clear that he loves what he is doing, and that's one of the reasons he's been so successful at it. In this interview, we talk about his unexpected transition from the Army due to injury and how that led him into government contract work, and just 2 years later to starting his own company in the space. We talk about starting a company, we talk about the world, the surprisingly interesting world of government contracting, and we talk about having a background in the work you do in a startup and how important that is to your success in that startup. We talk about why veterans are well suited to both entrepreneurship and the government contract space, and we also have a great conversation, one of my favorites, about the topic of work-life balance and boundaries, as well as starting a nonprofit. As you can tell, a lot of ground to cover, very applicable to every career path, and I think you'll find Scott to be an extremely uplifting, energizing person. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes. There's lots of things that we reference, lots of resources. There's links to all of those in the show notes. There's also a text transcript courtesy of Kathleen Dillon. And there is an opportunity to sign up for the Beyond the Uniform coaching program, where you are paired with one-on-one executive and career coaches who are subsidized to help you figure out your next career move. Whether that's getting out of the military, whether that's getting back in the military, whether that is you've been out of the military for many years and just trying to figure out what to do next, it is an incredible resource. I don't pitch things often, but this one is one that I really believe in, and I'm really happy to see the impact we're having on people's lives, so check it out. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Scott Davidson. Joining me today in Washington, D.C. is Scott Davidson. Scott, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a beautiful day out here in Washington, D.C., and I'm excited to get this started.
And special thanks to Tim Cochran from episode number 151. He's over at American Corporate Partners. Tim introduced me. I actually reached out to Tim, and I said, Tim, you are so plugged into this space. Who is the one person that I need to interview? And he wrote back instantly, Scott. So very appreciative of the connection. I wanted to give listeners a quick bio on Scott. He is the CEO and managing principal of GCO, which is a consulting company that positions government contractors and their legal counselors for success in the federal marketplace, helping them mitigate risk in a highly complex and regulated environment. He served in the U.S. Army for 9 years as both an enlisted and officer, doing signal, air, and defense artillery and counter-IED work. With GCO, he has prepared, negotiated, and awarded over 500 GSA schedules since starting the firm back in 2009. So maybe to start things off, Scott, I know that you were medically retired from the Army due to injuries sustained in Iraq in 2007. How did you approach this sudden and, I'm guessing, unexpected discharge from the military?
That's a great question. You know what? And that's actually, it's a big driver in what I like to do now as far as looking to help with transition and anything with entrepreneurship, because I was in that position. I tell you right now, I love the Army, love the military, of course. I love that I have an Uncle Sam. And I never, you didn't think that I was going to do a 20 years, at least 20 years, right? There was no nothing in my mind, at least, that I ever thought that I wasn't going to continue my contract and re-enlist every time my contract would come up. But then, you know, things don't go as planned, as we know. 2006 and 7 was an interesting time during the war. I was there for the surge, of course, doing counter IED work. And, you know, it was as quick as something. I mean, because I was actually, and I don't, you know, you don't forget these things. I was recovering. We were right at the time. It was an interesting story because when I got to Landstuhl and I was recovering from a surgery there, I was actually in like the day room, kind of like that. And there was Fox News was on TV. And the only reason I remember it specifically was two things that happened that day. One, unfortunately, was the shooting at Virginia Tech, because that was like something that'll burn into your mind, unfortunately. But then the second story was what had happened at Walter Reed, right? The Walter Reed scandal at the time. And the interesting thing about that was when I got, they basically said, well, nobody's going to Walter Reed, because that's where I thought I was going back to in my recovery. And what had happened was we went to these warrior transition units. It's the first time it actually had come up. Unfortunately, it was disorganized, but that's anything that gets stood up very quickly. But I was actually, so I get transferred. I go to Eisenhower Medical Center in Fort Gordon, in Augusta, Georgia, of all places. By the way, it's a beautiful place, but it just was an unexpected place. And, yeah, it was as quick as somebody walked in my room. I was there for already about 6 weeks, and they said, you know, unfortunately, we're referring you, your physical evaluation board liaison officer, and you're going to be medically, you know, you're going to be retired. And it was something that it didn't sink in right away, because you don't think about things like that, right? I'm thinking that I'm going to heal, I'll have another couple of surgeries, everything's fine, and, you know, life will go back to whatever it was going to go back to, but that just wasn't the case, right? And this is an interesting part about that, like you said about the transition piece. The shock of it is that in that particular position, it's no longer like in most people, where I think the biggest issue is like with TAP or transition. So for transition assistance program, you know when your end date is, right? So you can start to plan. If it's 18 months from now, my contract ends, right? They get that part. This was a little different. I was basically told, I was told in April, and I was retired by June. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was June 20th, 2007 was my actual retirement date. So I didn't have time to prepare for anything, except for I went to a lot of appointments. I was still doing rehab on my leg, and it was a bit of a shock for transition. Unfortunately, it was unprepared. But the other part is that I think that comes with that type of challenge, especially in the climate we were in. You know, I had been deployed already for, I was probably 9 or 10 months at the time. And you just want to go home, right? Like you just want to get back and see your family, things like that. So there's a lot of variables that kind of play with the, I don't care, I'm not thinking about the future, I just want to get home and get done. So that, I think with the transition, it was an abrupt change for me, completely unexpected. But I also couple that with the fact that I just wanted to go home and be with my family and just, you know, be home. So it was a unique time.
What advice do you have for listeners who are maybe on active duty about how to adapt to their transition and how to adapt to the civilian world?
Great question. So I think the first thing is that you'll look at there's a lot of experts in the field, and there's so many resources. The one thing I would always tell people, especially if I had sold this today, I say plan. You have a timeline. And now I know things can, you know, that's fluid, right? It's still the military. You can get called up for deployment. You can get, you know, stop loss. I don't know if they're doing that anymore, but there's a million things that can happen. But you can still plan and be ready. I think if you plan and set your timeline up, that you understand that this is what I want to do, and I know that my job is ending, because you do have a unique thing where you have a contract, right? Most people, whether they know they get fired or not, they're not going to have time to plan. You have a unique situation where you actually know the day you're going to stop working, right? I mean, it's concrete. It's good to say, and that's, again, there's some unbelievable extenuating circumstances that take place. We know the day you're leaving. So backwards plan from that date and take advantage of everything that is out there. There are so many great nonprofits or different transitional programs that are out there, whether you want to be an entrepreneur or you're looking for a job or you're, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, especially being a veteran, there's so many programs that are there that I can just, you know, you can rattle off all of them, right? Entrepreneurial Bootcamp for Veterans, IVMF, you know, you could go find, you know, like we said, Tim Cochran earlier, find a mentor to help you with transition. There's all these different things that are out there that are available. So my number one advice is backwards plan, because the Army teaches you that, or the military for that matter, would teach you how to backwards plan from your end date and take advantage of the resources. I mean, the space has become, I think it's a good thing. It's become so saturated because of the war, you know, the war on terror. And, you know, and it's a product of it, right? It actually shows what I think is that there's a little bit more obviously from previous wars, there's a lot more support out there. And you could see it by just going and seeing how many nonprofits are out there to support veterans. And then, of course, make sure you're checking that you're using reputable sources. But it's amazing to see just all the different resources that are available. So I say backwards plan and then use them and very clearly know, try to figure out what it is that you want to do.
That's great. And one of the things I'd appreciated in our exchange getting up to the interview was you had said something about advising veterans to use the drive that they had in the military to their advantage in the civilian world. What would you want listeners to know about that?
Well, I mean, I think by far that's one of our greatest traits, right? Everybody, you know, we look at veterans, and I know that opinions vary with regards to how, you know, they're supposed to be viewed. But I always look back at, like, all the things that we did, even if I'm not saying that, like, you know, listen, the Navy SEALs and the Green Berets and the MARSOC guys, I mean, those are the top of the top, right? They have done so many incredible physical and mental things that it's what they've gone through. They've set the bar. But don't sell yourself short if you're not them, right? So what I mean by that is that basic training is not a cakewalk. I mean, some people might look back and if anybody says it is, then they never, you know, I kind of disregard that, right? Because for some people to go through that and to sacrifice what they do and to basically, you know, enter in what I always say is selfless service, and to go for, if you're going for 9 weeks with the Army, if you're going for, I think it's 13 or 14 with the Marines, I mean, you went through this and you came out of this side. Your training never ends, but you were able to exert all the physical and mental toughness to go through those things, right? Use that where you could say that there was really nothing you couldn't accomplish for what you're going to do in the civilian world. And I like that attitude, right? That's why I love hiring military folks, because I know if I need it, if I need something bird dogs, if I know if I can rely on somebody, or if I know that I will tell you, one of the things I really love is the fact that most of them won't, a little bit of pressure. I always say, you know, you really want to test someone's character, just put a drop of pressure on there and see how they react, right? Not all the pressure in the world, just a drop. And you'll get a good reaction from somebody, right? Because you want to see how they're going to react in that. Because if they can't handle that, they're definitely not going to handle the day we have a crisis, right? So I always like to see those things. So you take all those things that you learn from the military, right, that you use, and that's gotten you to wherever you are. And if you were from a cook to an MP to an infantry guy, whatever, or girl, whatever it is, use the fact that you were able to accomplish all these things. And now that whatever you did, task that you have in front of you, you could do the same thing. I mean, and it should be echelons below the effort that you had to do while you were working in the military. And especially if you were deployed, forward deployed, especially if you were forward deployed in any of the recent conflicts, it's something that, again, I think that is the number one discriminator, is that you're able to overcome so much within the service that getting out of it and those new challenges should be taught the same way, because you didn't know what you were getting into essentially when you walked in. Like when I went to basic training, I didn't know what day one was going to be. I also didn't know what day six was going to be, but I woke up and I did it, right? Because you adapt to whatever it is. In the civilian world, it's going to be a little bit, you know, with the job, you're pretty much going to have a certain thing, unless there's certain jobs, of course, like, you know, that may come up that you don't have that. But majority of time, you're going to have a lead time and you're going to have time to plan and understand something and execute the work. That's great. You have all that time to plan and get it right. It's not that you in the military, you have zero defect mentality, because you do have to make on the fly decisions sometimes that do make a difference between life or death. And all those things are so important, because when you apply them to the real world, everything should be easier, I guess is the best way for me to put it.
That's great. And I love that too. I think that a lot of veterans compare themselves to the extreme of the extreme, the Navy SEALs or the people who were the people who had it worse. And I think in doing so, they discount and overlook what they went through, which I think you're right. Every single person in the military has been through a lot. They have that determination and grit, even if they don't recognize that they do. So I love that you're pointing that out. And one of the things that I wanted to ask was, if you were talking to someone who's on active duty right now, how would you tell them when they asked, hey, what is GCO? How would you explain what you do?
So, I mean, I'm going to talk about the exciting world of legal regulatory compliance and government contracting. So if you fall asleep, I'll wake you up when I'm done. So the reality is that we are very specifically, we're designed to help businesses basically set themselves up for success on the regulation and compliance side of the business, right? Government contracting is a great way if you're going to start a business, especially if you're a small business, if you're a veteran. There are so many great things about government contracting that there's no reason that if you're going to look to start a business, you shouldn't get into that line. What I mean by that is this: almost everything that you did in the service translates to something you can sell to the federal government. That's the way I always kind of look at it. I'm not saying that it's something that could be always going to be 100% successful, but what I mean by that is that the federal government buys everything, right? I mean, they literally do. There's nothing that they don't buy if you look at just the goods and services that they purchase. And there's businesses built on every single one of them because the government has to buy from people. So if you're an MP, the government buys physical security services as well as forensic and investigation services. They buy tactical gear. If you're a cook, they buy cooking services. If you're a motivational speaker, they buy motivational speaking and leadership courses. So it runs the gamut. So what we do, though, is we are on the side of setting you up for success, because what I always tell clients, and we service clients from, you know, the top 10 in the Fortune 500 down to, you know, smaller businesses that, you know, maybe are running a revenue of about $1 million+ a year. What we tell people is this, is that if you want to be successful, that's exactly what your goal is going to be. But when you become successful, because by taking taxpayer dollars, you will get checked one day, right? Because you take that, that's basically what it is. I go, if you're going to be a failure in this business, no one's going to come look because you never took money from the government and they don't care. But the reality is once you become successful, it's not an if, it's a when, right? The government will come check and they'll make sure that the dollars are being spent appropriately and that they're being allocated and spent wisely. So if you are, so what GCO does is make sure on a multitude of fronts, we work with legal counsel, we work with contracts managers, pricers, all the different things that work from everybody in these large defense contractors to just, you know, all different type of GovCon vendors. We ensure that you meet all the different regulations and that you know, when that rainy day comes, because there, you know, there's plenty of those rainy days, that you're not only prepared, but we're ready to go. And I always like to say left the sail, because there's, you know, that's the term they see, you should be left the boom. I use it as left the sail. I go, if you're compliant and we set you up for success before you start, it's even better. Most of the time, that's not the case, you know, and we're usually called in after essentially the bomb has gone off and you have auditors or, you know, investigators at your door asking questions. And then, of course, we have contract mitigation or risk mitigation teams that go in and protect and of course, exactly what they're called. They mitigate risk with regards to whatever penalties that you may occur. But yeah, we like to set you up for success, whether it's pre-contract or post-contract.
I imagine this work requires a high level of attention to detail, and just I just view you as sorting through all of these requirements and regulations. Do you view yourself as like a really detail-oriented person? Is that part of what drew you to this?
It is. So, I mean, and I'll tell you too, because for me, when I got separated, again, I had zero expectation. You know, that for me, I never was going to get into the government contracts world. My background was in everything from, I did have my MBA when I left the service, but my background wasn't in business at all. I mean, I had a criminal justice degree when I you know, when I joined the service. I did it reverse, actually. I got my college degree, then I went in as enlisted, so don't ask me what my logic was, but that just, you know, it actually worked out better because I got to live in all three of the worlds. I was lower enlisted, I was an NCO, and I was a commissioned officer. So I got to enjoy all three levels of and kind of go through the food chain before I was retired. So I mean, it's each world humbles you, right? I mean, it's I think I like that better too. The, you know, being enlisted was like kind of like being back in, you know, college days. I really had a good time. And then NCO got a little bit more responsibility, and then I went to OCS Fort Benning, and then, you know, things kind of really changed. So, but yeah, for me, that wasn't, you know, contracts management. This wasn't even in the cards. What had happened was, and I'll always say it, this is interesting, and that's why I like to tell folks this too. I started to apply for all these different jobs, right? Because I just didn't know what was out there. Because again, this was just something that wasn't expected. And what had happened was, there was somebody who took a chance. He was an ex Air Force officer. He just became successful at the time, the company was called EG&G. It's now called AECOM. So EG&G got bought by URS, which eventually got bought by AECOM. So if you kind of give to where it is, and everybody in the defense world is sort of familiar with AECOM now at the time. So at the time, legacy EG&G, this individual, it was Air Force. He was, he was an Air Force captain, actually. He was a contracts guy for the Air Force. And he was the vice president of operations for EG&G at the corporate side. Saw my resume, actually, I had applied for something, and he brought me in for an interview. And my background was there. And he says, I just like, you know, he goes, I like military. I like your background. You know, I could teach you these things if you want to learn them. And that's actually how it went. It was a very unique item where he's like, I'd rather have somebody that could bird dog things and have the attention to detail and make sure it and gets things done than having someone who I know may have the experience, but may not have the drive. And I said, I'm not going to turn down the opportunity. And that's how it went. And what happened was I learned very quickly that I was very good at a very specific, not very good, but I fell in love, I would say, almost with a very unique type of contract. And it was it's called the GSA schedule. And it's a very unique contract, but the government procures 10% of all its buys for this one contract, which represents billions and billions of dollars. And it's very new. There's the regulations surrounding that contract are very nuanced, right? And so I quickly recognized that, which kind of led me down the path of, you know, hey, you know, I kind of said to myself, I love the opportunity, I appreciate it, but I don't know if I want to do this for anybody else anymore. I want to do this for myself. And that's really what transitioned me to taking the risk. And it was a risk. I mean, it was I said, I'll give you guys 2 weeks. I appreciate the opportunity. And at the time, if you think about how long LegalZoom's been around, I went back online on LegalZoom and I filed for an LLC. And I started the company. And that's really how it all went. There wasn't really a business plan, which is counter to what I normally do. I wrote the business plan in parallel to what I was doing. I just felt that it was, for some reason, I needed a change. And then, of course, now it's 10 years later.
and at that point, when you decided to make the leap, how much experience did you have in this space?
Not a lot. I got it. Like I said, it was not in my background. You're only talking about maybe 2 years. Besides things that I read, of course.
Do you think, though? One question I have is, I know a lot of listeners aspire to start their own company, and a question that often comes up is, do you go straight into a company? Do you get a little bit of experience first? Do you go to school? And I'm just curious, you know, because I imagine those 2 years of experience were still helpful in both identifying this as an opportunity and then being successful at it. What advice do you have for listeners about how to consider whether they need to get some experience before jumping into whatever company they're thinking of starting?
So I think that's a great question. So what I would actually highly encourage is, first off, so I loved what I did, right? And I still do to this day. As odd as it sounds, that people look at me like I'm crazy. I still get involved in complex cases. I do a lot more business development nowadays. But when there's complex litigation cases, I'm absolutely billing into those cases now because I love doing that and I love figuring out and how to and actually protecting our clients and saving them. So I still get – that's the best part about this is that although I do more of a development side now as the company has grown, I still get to get my hands dirty and really get into the what I enjoy doing over these years. So what I would tell people is you got to enjoy – if you're going to start a company, the first thing you do is really figure out what you want to do. Don't – I hate to see, and I see it a lot nowadays, especially with social media, Instagram, things like that. Don't fall into the thing where, you know, for every very successful T-shirt company, because I'm going to use this as an example, there's a million failed, you know, veteran T-shirt companies or apparel companies out there, right? Now, I'm not saying don't take the leap, but make sure you're different and you're ready. But if it's something that you can do and that you're in love with, it's not going to be, you know, everyone likes to think it's so, there's this romantic notion of like a movie or cinematic experience like Facebook where the one in a million thing and you're going to grow overnight and they're going to offer this money. I wish that would get out of people's head when it came to starting businesses, right? There has to be growth because if not, and I've seen it and I got to tell you, unfortunately, I've been in those meetings with clients when they grew too fast and weren't prepared and they're on the receiving end of what is literally the destruction notice from the federal government that, hey, the IRS is here now, the Department of Justice is here, the assistant U.S. attorney sitting there, you know, and you guys did a lot of things wrong and it's going to really hurt and we don't know if you're going to survive. Oh, and you're going to get suspended and or debarred from ever doing federal government contracting again. So I always caution people to say, plan carefully, right? Don't jump. I mean, in the sense that I learned from my mistakes where you got to have a background on what you're going to do. And if you don't, learn it, right? Because there are so many great business resources out there for veterans. And I, like I said, I'm always quick to point out, and I actually had the honor and pleasures of teaching them for GovCon. So, you know, Syracuse University has that great program across the United States for Institute for Veterans and Military Families, you know, to start the entrepreneur program. But there's so many different entrepreneur programs now that's in all different sectors, like whether it's, you know, the Patriot Boot Camp, I'm just saying that because they do coding and IT work. I mean, there's so many different things that if you can't find what you're looking for, I mean, I'd be surprised. Like if there's an interest for you to start a business and there's not some type of entrepreneurial boot camp out there, like I would almost feel like maybe do a little more research and you're going to find it. So I think doing your homework and really making sure that you like what you do instead of jumping at an opportunity that you're like, you know, is it something I want to do? Or, you know, somebody else was successful at it. Let me try it. I'd caution it because, like I said, I see what the bad side of the business could be. And I see a lot of failed businesses that way. And a little bit of planning goes a long way.
That's great. And for listeners, if you're interested in the IVMF, I'll add in the show notes. Episode 212, I talked to Dr. Michael Haney, who started the IVMF. He talks about that. It's an incredible resource. We'll have multiple guests on from IVMF in the future as well. In episode 131, I talked to one of the workers at Patriot Boot Camp. And I'll also include Bunker Labs, which all three of those are great resources, and there's Beyond the Uniform episodes about those and specifically how they can help military entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. I should never leave them out. Bunker Labs, fantastic. They have a great partnership with WeWork. Go check out what they do. They do great things, and all of them, like you said, IVM, those are all probably those are the gold standard for what people doing great things out there for veterans in business.
What about, you know, I'm thinking we had Mike Durand in episode 200. He's another veteran who kind of talked about this government contracting space. What do you think is one of the reasons why veterans are so well suited to be successful in the space of government contracting?
Well, I think it's just what you said. Let's take just a small step back. So we know from the SBA that 1 in 6 veterans in their lifetime will attempt to start a business. So the entrepreneurial spirit is within us, right? And I think that goes hand in hand with the fact that most people, I'm not saying everybody, most people who join the military, whether it's the Army, the Marines, or, you know, the Air Force or the Navy, they have that self-starter attitude, right? There is something in there that they that they know. I think that's what it is. I always call it, there's a little bit of fire. There's always that spark, right? How it's nurtured within, you know, how Uncle Sam wants to go ahead and nurture that spark and to develop the individual, they'll do that, right? And I think that, you know, your indoctrination into the military will do that, whether it's boot camp, if it's OCS, if it's any of the service academies, you know, they'll grow that spirit for you as you go. But when you leave, I still think that that drive doesn't leave with you. And I think that's what it is, because the challenge of it, I will caution everybody, as you probably know this from speaking to a lot of people, if you're going to go into the entrepreneurial path, right, you better understand that it is not a 9-to-5 job and it's yours. And I think that's the best part about it, because in the Army, at least for me, and I remember, you're doing 16-hour days most days, right? I mean, yeah, we're going to get 4 days once a month and that, but let's take deployment even out of it. I don't remember where I wasn't doing a 16-hour day, or I wasn't doing something on the weekend to prep myself ready for the week, right? So for the having your own business, I love the fact that every hour that I put into something comes back to me, right? I've heard Mark Cuban say it before, other thing, there is nothing better that I work 80 hours for myself than 40 for somebody else, right? And it feels good. And when you get that success, there's nothing better than knowing that I did that. So 80 hours for me in a week, well, 100 hours for me in a week nowadays, you know, that's all for me, right? I know that it's building the business. And then the end result is there's a success, which then does all these other stable things for the rest of, you know, my family and just your lifestyle. But people, I would caution for entrepreneurship to understand that it's not going to be 40 hours a week. But I think that's one of the reasons why veterans like it, is because they've been through that challenge, right? They've been through what could be unbelievable circumstances. And they also know, which is one of my favorite things me and my friends talk about, is that lack of sleep will not kill you, right? We learned that. We were absolutely taught that, and we practice what we preach. And sleep deprivation, now over a long term, we get that, you know, it may not be the healthiest thing, but if you need to put a project through and you gotta just hard work it. And there's days where I'm with the team where we have something where we're actually doing, you know, we're doing 48 or 72 hours straight, and we'll rotate here and there, and we'll do our, we actually run sleep schedules like that, but we have to get it done. We love it. My guys, we all love it, because it reminds us of those days where we know we have to get something done, but there's a goal. And we're all that, you know, with that goal mindset and the ability to know that we can withstand just about anything, right, to accomplish the mission. I think that all goes hand in hand with the entrepreneurial spirit to grow and be successful.
That's awesome. I love that. And I know that a lot of the guests, there seems to be a theme in some of the questions I get around work-life balance. And there's this concern about their professional life taking up too much time. And I think that's valid for many people. I do also think that many people may have a misconception there. And I think that for listeners, it's clear how passionate Scott is about what he's doing. And it rings true that the 80 hours that he's doing, or 100 hours he's doing, building his company, building his mission, that is so much preferable than if he had a job that he was working 30 to 40 hours a week. And so don't just look at the hours, and you know, it's not just a number. It is also the quality of those hours and how that energizes you and aligns with what you want for your life.
And I'll add to that. And actually, Dr. Haney, to go back to that, was headed to me. I actually, this is a couple of years back, I had a conversation with him, because I was at one of the national conventions, and I remember he specifically said, and always stuck with me, he goes, 80 hours, 100 hours, that's great. He goes, but the discipline of making time for your family and yourself is also one of the more important things. Now, and I take that to heart still to this day, right? So I make sure, and then this is for anybody how they want to schedule it. I know it's 1,000% easier if you don't have a family yet, and then you go do whatever you need to do in order to build that business. But with a family, you know, I make sure that I carve out a time in my day that I actually will not put anything on there except I have family time, right? Regardless of if the world is ending, everybody knows that I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be bothered by that. And I don't deviate really from that ever, because it's too important, right? Because I don't want to get that time back. So it's and it also makes it's also a great stress reliever, all that kind of thing. But you get that time with your family, you set it aside every day, it becomes routine. There's always going to be emergencies and you have to adjust to it. But even if it's you're setting aside those 2 or 3 hours, and that's all right, you're going to go work another 16, that's fine. But you need to have that, like you said, work-life balance. But there's always going to be a sacrifice somewhere, right? You're never going to be able to get it all. You're never going to get it all right, right? They always say you're going to get 2 out of 3, right? So you got to figure out, is it your family? Is it fitness? Is it work? Is it whatever? I think personally, you know, some things you're going to miss. And I think you can try to make it always work, but you're always going to probably just fall a little short in one of those areas. But as long as you can live with that and understand it, and it's not going to impact the mission, then you have to deal with that and understand that you're never going to be able to achieve everything you kind of want with the sense like, hey, I need 8 hours of sleep tonight. It's not going to happen, right? You might get 5, but I got 3 hours of my family and I was able to work and get all this other stuff and this and that done. And I got it. And I got to run for 5 miles, right? So you got to figure out there's little victories every day, right? And just figure out what they are and just make sure it works.
That's awesome. And I also want to make sure we cover, and I apologize if I mispronounce this, but could you talk about Burbiz and what led you to starting this nonprofit, and especially how you were able to attract these celebrity talents around this?
So this is an interesting thing. This actually all comes out of, this has been a labor of love, I guess the best way for me to put it. So, when I also, cause I was abruptly separated, I'll never forget. And I, you know, this is it's a story that's kind of near and dear to my heart. There was a young E4 female specialist that was, also being medically retired at the same time, cause we were all put in these units, and she actually had, she had a head injury. She had a TBI. It was pretty significant TBI, and her short-term memory, was extremely affected by it. About this injury, it was caused by an IED, and I remember walking. I was on crutches. I kind of got myself out of the. There was like an office building, and you go to meet with your PE, your PEBLO, they call them, Physical Evaluation Board Liaison Officer, and she was sitting there and she was crying, and I remember coming out, and I was a captain at the time, and she was in E4, and I said, hey, what's going on? I just was, you know, make sure she's all right. And she just tells me the story how she can't remember her medical appointments. And they had to give her a BlackBerry. At the time, it was a BlackBerry, like some sort. It wasn't a BlackBerry. It was like, I think it was like a BlackBerry. I don't know what it was. But she had to write down her appointments. And she's like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? She's 21, right? And it resonated with me because I'm thinking to myself, I mean, she's saying she can't remember, you know, and it will never get better, which is the worst part, right? I mean, so she's stable as far as they're concerned. But I mean, at 21 years old, I remember my whole life was in front of me. I was just getting out of college and everything was fun. But then to be faced with this, you know, an injury like this, and then not having the ability to think that, I don't know how you're going to have probably the ability to even hold down employment, right? Because that's such a specific injury that causes short-term memory loss. I mean, I don't know how you get around that, right? So that story always stuck with me, right? And I had met Justin Constantine also at an EBV event at their NatCon a couple years later. And Justin Constantine, he was a Marine JAG. He was retired as a lieutenant colonel. But Justin, if people aren't familiar, and he'd probably be great for your podcast, Justin, he's an inspirational speaker now. But in 2006, when we were in Iraq, Justin dismounts from his vehicle. He actually volunteered to go from being a JAG officer to go to civil affairs into the Marine Corps and right in the heart of it in Ramadi. And if people aren't familiar with Justin's story, which you could see through TED Talk and a bunch of other different things that he's done on all these specials, there was an embedded reporter with them. When he dismounts from the vehicle for whatever, we don't know the reason why, he doesn't remember, but apparently he shoves the reporter out of the way. And a second later, a sniper shoots and the bullet hits Justin. And I think it's the back of his lower right ear, and it comes out the front of his face. So he loses it was a horrific wound from the top of his nose down to the bottom of his throat, was completely exposed from an AK-47 round to the face, back of the head to the face. They thought he was dead, of course. He drops. The sniper's starting to, of course, pick up heavy fire as the Marines go fight back. I believe two of the Marines were killed at the time. And basically, the corpsman, who only was in the arm the Navy for 6 months, rushes up and in the most unbelievable conditions, happens to wind up saving Justin's life through rescue breathing, through doing an emergency tracheotomy. And I mean, it's just, his story is incredible. So I met Justin, and Justin had overcome so much, and he was very inspirational to me, especially because of his resilience. And him and I just had this quiet conversation at the NatCon that year, and we said, and we kind of exchanged stories, and we didn't like what was available for everybody out there. We felt that there was a barrier, right? We felt that there was a barrier for veterans to have resources. And so what we did, and this is where Burbas eventually came up with, is that we started to figure out, how do we have something where it's a one-stop shop type of event? So if you're a veteran, military spouse, or a caregiver, that you can get everything addressed in one place. So it takes away the stigma. And again, there's nothing wrong with these events that happen where, okay, it's just a job fair, or, oh, it's just, I have to want to start a business to come here. We said, well, we want to make sure we bring back the camaraderie. We want to be able to bridge the military-civilian divide. We also want to address all of the issues, whatever, you know, that veterans and military spouses and caregivers, you know, basically face. So through 4 years of a labor of love, we started to adjust our format after each event. Now, I will tell you, basically, our first event was a miserable failure. We had maybe 40 people show up, if I remember correctly, and it just was not good. Our last event, there was 817. And eight of the 817, 71% were post-9/11 veterans. And what we did was, what Burbas essentially is you now – you walk into the experience, and what we've now changed is, it's very focused networking experiences with resources from every different type of resource, I guess, essentially. So what we have is, and we take away the barriers. So what we do is, if there's the CEO from all these different companies, if it's PTSD, if it's health and fitness, if it's yoga, transcendental meditation, if it's, you know, everything from the post-alignment GI Bill, we will have experts there. And we're talking, you know, I said, in some cases, it's C-level and down, where you just mingle and mix and ask the questions of the individuals in these meetups in this area. And we added a little bit of fun to it, which we noticed made a big difference. That's why we call it Burbas, because the original, when we changed everything, we had a lot of local distillers come in and sponsor and provide samples of bourbon, right? All different types of bourbon. And they were all veteran-owned companies, right? And then more veteran liquor companies came out, like Heroes Vodka and all these other these different distillers that were veteran-owned companies, and said, hey, can we, you know, we do that? And so what we noticed was, well, A, we set the room up a very specific way where we would always have a sample by a resource station, right? And so when anybody ever got a sample, they would go right into a resource, and they're very easily identified. It's going to say opportunity provider in very large letters, and it's going to say, access to capital, or it'll say, business resource or legal resource, right, with all our legal partners, or business compliance, or GI Bill assistance, or because when we have our events in DC, we have the mayor's office and the governor's office from both Virginia and Maryland show, and like we have those disability and compensation services, they got that meetup right there. So you can literally go and walk in, and then you can just go down the line and say, hey, not only do I want to start a business, I want to learn about yoga, transcendental meditation. I want to use my 9/11 GI Bill. I want to use my VA home loan. I want to learn how to get better with eating, or I want to just learn how to do legal compliance better. I need an attorney. All those things are right there. And the best part on top of everything else is it's free. We don't charge anybody anything to come. So we decided to bring down those barriers. So all that's going on at one time. And then we also encourage the civilian counterparts that come, because we want everybody to also to team up, to have that conversation, and also, to, like I said, to see that there's a, you know, military-civilian divide. And what we noticed was, when we took down the barrier, in any way to say this is in the wrong way, but we noticed that the people who really wanted to help showed up, right? Because I said, I'm not charging you anything, so why not? So then we started to see people like Clint Romache, right? Medal of Honor recipient, You know, his book's Red Platoon, and they just had the Netflix special on him. Clint shows up to our event now because he likes what we, you know, what we're doing. We, you know, of course, Justin, CEO of, you know, of Street Shares or all these other different things. A lot of the different sports stars started to show up as well because we have a very longstanding relationship with the Redskins Charitable Foundation. So a lot of the Redskins alumni would show up to our events because they wanted to help out in veteran causes and do meet and greets and things of that nature. So we started to see this just a different dynamic because they saw the benefit, of course, from connecting because we have so many different partners that go to our events now. But they also truly wanted to help. And there was, and we said by eliminating that barrier, it was amazing to see what the turnout looked like.
That's awesome. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended. And that is, before we wrap up here, what have we not covered that you want to make sure that listeners know?
I think here's the one thing I want to say for everybody. Listen, you've been through everything with the military. You've overcome every challenge. And this also goes to Blue Star families and military spouses, too. They have a hard rap as well. I mean, nobody has an easy life in the military, right? If you do, you weren't in the military. I mean, but it's fun and it's selfless service at its best, right? There's so much that you can get out of it. And if you're still in, take advantage of every single program that's available to you. And there's so much. I said, use your fingertips, look at the resources. And even if you're active duty, reserve guard, you have all these resources that are there to make things better for you. Use those resources to prepare yourself. And there's nothing wrong. And if anything else, I do want to address this. Do your 20 years, right? If you love the military that much, don't be in a rush to get out. You know, weigh your options. If it's something for you, if I could have done my 20, I would have absolutely wanted to do my 20. I did 9 and some change, and it was not my choice at all, right? Some people want to do their 4, and it's a stepping stone, and they got so much out of Uncle Sam. I think that's great. But what I'd say is I encourage self-service. I encourage you to take full advantage of everything that's available to you. And also, when you leave the service and you get on your feet and things are going well, I encourage also self-service to continue. So if you could help out others and kind of pass along your experience and, you know, volunteer and do all these other things that are out there, you know, there's so many different organizations that just even an hour would make a difference in people who are a little bit less fortunate. So I always like to say that, you know, there's always so much that you can do to keep yourself occupied and to give back and to continue that self-service pride. I would encourage that as you go on in life.
This is awesome. Well, Scott, I appreciate your energy and enthusiasm, and it's very inspiring to hear you talk about all this. And I think that for listeners, whether you're interested in entrepreneurship or any career path, I think there's something to take out of this conversation. So thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. Thank you again for having me. And I really thank Tim Cochran for setting this up. And everybody, if you haven't gone out there, American Corporate Partners, absolutely go find yourself a mentor. I used it when I was in. I actually was both a mentor and a mentee. Absolutely, go ahead and use the programs like that. Use your resources, people.
Surface.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our Director of Outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our Editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our Data Analytics and Insights Advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you can continue with audible.com or not.
Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.